Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty. I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell.
Hi, Scott. It's good to be back. We're going to do this podcast or die trying.
You're not home yet, Jason.
Oh, no. Do you not trust me? Am I not a trustworthy co-podcaster? You got to make sure that I'm Federation material, Vulcan That's Hello right. material.
I have not known you long enough to trust you.
Okay.
I will say, so this episode, we're going to obviously talk about Star Trek Discovery, season three, not season five. We don't have a time machine.
Yeah.
Episode five. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And also, how are we on episode five already?
I don't even know. I thought it was episode four, and then I looked, and it's episode five. It's amazing.
I feel like we just started watching Discovery, and now it's going to be over before we know it.
It's terrible.
Such bittersweet when you're watching a good show. And that this episode has a lot of the things you expect from a Star Trek episode. One of my favorite things that it has is a kind of jerky Starfleet admiral.
Yeah. So one of the nice things in here is we get this new admiral who is played by Oded Fehr, who has been in a bunch of things. And he is Admiral Vance, who I guess we'll be seeing for a little while, and I like it. One of my questions for you is, how much do you think the rest of this season is going to be? Obviously, there's a story arc going on here, but I'm wondering now if the rest of the season is going to be the Discovery following the leads and learning things, but episodically, week to week, being sent on missions by this new Federation, which is a very old school kind of Star Trek. And I have to admit, I kind of am hoping that that's what it is, because I kind of really like the idea that every week the Discovery, you know, they're all standing around their hologram galaxy or whatever, and Admiral Vance comes out and is kind of a jerk but also kind of understandable, and he's like, you're gonna do this is your job this week. And that's what the show is for a little while. I think that would be kind of fun.
I agree. And I was going to ask you, because Michael Burnham is still very concerned about the burn.
Right.
And it becomes clear to towards the end of this episode that she's not – well, obviously it's a huge event and it's a mystery, so she wants to solve it. And also they're doing something with music, and so it feels like they're doing this episodic thing and leaning heavily on the episodic thing, but also – working kind of the things that you, not that I don't want to speak for you, but that you wanted them to avoid, because it feels like that the burn is going to be the big thing and the music and all that.
So our friend Joe Rosensteel, who maybe will be on here with us at some point if he's available on a Thursday evening, he called it. He said to me, and just mark my words, this is not a spoiler, this is cynical observation based on 3 years of Star Trek Discovery. He said, it's going to be like a lullaby that Burnham's mom sang to her, and that Burnham's mom somehow is responsible for the burn, and they're going to have to like decode the notes of the lullaby in order to learn. And I thought, that's ridiculous. And also, it scares me how close that might be to be what they do here. And again, I'll say what I did after the first episode, which is like, first of all, I kind of don't want to know why the burn happened. And second, please don't let it be related to Michael Burnham in any way. Please.
It's true. It's a big universe. Everything doesn't have to be Michael Burnham adjacent.
No, I just please no. But if we must, also I like the hubris of somebody who is randomly landed in a new time and sees something that's been a mystery to the entire galaxy for 90 years, and her first instinct is, well, I'm going to solve that mystery that everybody else has spent 90 years unable to solve, but I'm going to figure it out in like a year. Except
she's
that's Michael Burton, and that's totally what they're going to do. But anyway, that was my least favorite thing in the whole episode, is that they're building this story arc of the mystery of the music, and why is the music the same in all these planets? The answer is, well, the whole galaxy was interconnected for thousands of years, and surely the music spread from place to place. Like, why is that? I don't know.
Everybody is completely isolated. It now takes much longer to get from place to place, but still things will flow.
Right. Presumably, you know, a great lullaby, a great hit song is just going to make it from place to place. So,
yeah, I would think so. Plus, you know, calculus.
I don't know, but that is, that is the least good of what I would say is a very good episode. Or in fact, I'm curious what you thought about the structure of this, because I thought it was kind of fascinating that this is in so many ways. I mean, this whole season has had these interesting sort of episodic, you know, every episode has got its own like thing of what it is while it's also advancing the plot. And this one, the structure is so perfect because it's almost like you've got the shell of the story arc, and then embedded inside it is a Star Trek episode, which is like literally like you have a mission, go over here, you got to do mm-hmm. some stuff with the ship, you got to beam over to a place, you got to solve a mystery, you got to mm-hmm. there's a twist where you're like, oh, we are the monster all along, and then they have to fix it and they have to do mm-hmm. some science, and then it's solved. And that's basically what this episode is, but that's kind of like the little crunchy center of the candy bar or whatever. I don't know what this metaphor is that I'm saying here, but right? Because around it is this whole like, who are we? Do you trust mm-hmm. us? We'll do a job for you. How are we going to adapt mm-hmm. to the future? But in that core, all of a sudden, it's just Burnham standing on the bridge of the Discovery being like, put up the shields, go to yellow alert. We're going to get a tractor beam. We're going to beam over an away team mm-hmm. and stuff that is just like the hardest core Star Trek in the center of it. I thought that was really great that it was structured that way. But I'm curious how you thought about, like, at the core, this is, like we've been saying all season, super Star Trek-y, right? Like, at the core, it's like mm-hmm. there is a 25-minute-long, super concentrated bit of Star Trek right in the heart of this episode.
I liked it. It did feel a little jarring. Like, here's this kind of arc-heavy beginning, like here we've got the, you know, we found Starfleet and the Federation, we are here, and right. then the Admiral's like, go solve this mystery for me, like go fetch that thing for me and come back, and now it's like a completely different episode, and I liked it, but it was just a little jarring, because I feel like they slammed them together.
It is very much like, we can do that. Let us prove ourselves to you, which is basically what they do. We'll you keep our captain hostage, and we'll go prove
we'll go do science. We're nice people.
Like, do they think, I assume they like are worried that they're scavengers who found an old Federation starship and are trying to con them or something, but like.
Or bad time travelers, right? They did talk about the temporal wars.
Evil time travelers of some sort. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I agree there is a left turn that happens, but I kind of gave it a pass because it was so exhilarating to have that scene on the bridge where Burnham, who we've never mm-hmm. really seen in that role, is like, she's the captain at that point. And she's doing all the Star Trek things, right? It is, like I said, it's like, you know, we're going to scan and then the shields mm-hmm. and we're going to, like, there's an ion storm and we can find it and there's a tractor beam and we're going to do this. And Owo gives Detmer a pep talk to pull the thing. And we're going to be okay and we're going to get it out there. And like mm-hmm. all of that, it's just like, I gave it a pass because that was so fun. I'm like, oh my God, like it's happening. This is all the purest, finest, uncut Star Trek right in my veins. It's like maybe too much.
No, I liked it, but I think it does show the dichotomy of kind of modern Star Trek and the line that they're trying to balance between doing this whole kind of, you know, mythology heavy arc driven thing and then also mixing in episodic kind of standalone stories that satisfy that Star Trek crunch that you want. And so I'm not saying it, see what I did there?
It's the crunchy center. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think it was bad. I just did think it was like, ooh, wow. It's like, hey, you're here now, go over here and come back.
Yeah. It is a little, again, I forgave it because it was so fun, but like, this is why I also asked the question about, is this what the show is going to be for the rest of the season, where they're kind of working on their story arc on the periphery of doing episodic stuff, which I actually thought that was what Discovery was going to be. That was my guess when it started. Was how do you do Star Trek in a modern context? And I assumed it would be more sort of episodic with the, you know, with the crunchy episodic center, and then the like the chocolate, rich chocolate coating is modern stuff. It's story arc and serialization, and the characters are doing things and they've got issues and all of that. And that's not, mm-hmm. I mean, it was more serialized than that. It was much less classic Star Trek than that. And this season feels like they are getting back to that. And I enjoy it, but it is jarring in that way. I mean, every time, because like, there is a boiled down 25-minute-long Star Trek episode in here, right? Where they're at the complete with like a mysterious spaceship that is a seed bank, and then there's like an invisible predator that turns out to be a very sad dad because his family died.
And I love that twist. Right? Because you're like, oh man, it's so creepy on this seed bank. Why are they all splitting up like away teams always do? This is bad. Like, something bad is going to happen. But nothing bad happens to them, but something bad has happened.
Has happened, which is melancholy and sad. And there's a metaphor there. There's a thematic linkage to this is all about sort of accepting what has happened and moving on and living in the present, which is a message for the whole crew, but that the sad dad who is at the seed bank has to learn that because he's put his dead family in cryo sleep, which I thought they don't make as much of it, but there's definitely a couple of looks where it's like, whew, like you don't put dead people in cryo, like they're dead. They're already dead, but like he puts them in cryo sleep. Like, no, you'll be fine. You'll wake up later. And it's like, no, you're a crazy person. On a spaceship, and so they have to help him out. But like that's a classic Star Trek thing. So you get that 20-25 minute. I don't know how long it is those scenes, but it's like a Star Trek episode happens in the midst of a Star Trek episode, which is I really enjoyed that part of it. It is jarring, and yet I just had the moment where I'm like, oh, we're doing this now. Okay, let's do it.
I thought these were two very good Star Trek episodes, one nestled into the other.
Yeah, little nesting dolls or the candy metaphor that we've destroyed now, but like it is that. So there's the larger thing about like earning the trust of the Federation, the new Federation, and we should talk about that because this is only five episodes in, and yet, you know, I feel like we've earned by putting it off to episode five, they make it feel like we're really kind of earning this moment, and that everybody being excited that they finally made it to the Federation. We wait till episode five to actually find the Federation, and there are a bunch of starships, and there's like a cool Starfleet Federation headquarters thing, and this is obviously a diminished Federation, but still it's like they're back among their culture and their
cool
people
stuff. There's the Voyager J.
That was a really nice touch, I thought, like unnecessary but a beautiful call out for the fans to say there have been 10 or actually it's funny because Tilly says 10 and then a voice off screen that was clearly dubbed in later when somebody pointed out that they always start with the one that isn't the A.
so she says
11. 10 actually, and some or 10, the 10 generations, it's amazing. And then you cut away to a shot of space and of the spaceships, and you hear a voice off screen say 11 actually. Which is a nice little, I think,
someone
probably
from the audience just yelling.
Yeah, I was thinking that might be
heard.
One of the writers was like, no, we can't, no, it's actually 11. They're like, okay, we'll loop that in dialogue. But what a great little tip of the hat. And they're like, is that a Constitution class? But 1,000 years later, and there's the like rainforest donut ship, and there's all
and
sorts of stuff going on.
Detached nacelles. Yeah. And that's just a little gift to the particular kind of Star Trek nerd that I am, who enjoys the starships more than I probably should. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, Tilly is representing you there, where she's like, where does the warp core go? How do they do that?
And I just thought, I think of all the models that I can now buy of all these starships.
I read a review of this episode that said, was this them reacting to that Picard scene where every ship in Starfleet is exactly the same in that last episode of Picard? And they're like, no, we got lots of weird ships going on here. But it was a great fun scene to show this is the thing that struck me about it is this Star Trek is a show about the future, and yet we are made to identify with these characters. And so what's really weird but kind of great about this season of Discovery and this episode in particular is we're watching people who are in the future, but there are our proxies. Now they get to be amazed about the future. Like Star Trek people are excited about essentially Star Trek because they've gone so far into the future that they're all geeking out over the ship designs. I think that's pretty amazing.
I agree. And they watched a little episode of Voyager as they went, and so that's great.
It's sure. It turns out that in Star Trek, Voyager comes back and runs for 1,000 seasons.
See, big hit. That's how you know you're watching science fiction. Zing! I kid Voyager because I love Voyager. Yeah. So they arrive. So you think there are two ways they can... Well, there are many ways that you can go, but you kind of expect they'll be like, okay, hooray, you're back. You're part of the family. let's have, you know, some salad and catch up on
and do some debriefing of what's going on. Yeah.
Or you can go the route of, we don't trust you at all. It's, the Federation has changed. Get out of here.
Right.
Those are the two extremes. They kind of, I think they thread the needle.
Because yeah.
They're like, okay, come on in. A lot has changed. We're going to kind of accept you for a moment, but we're not going to trust you. We have to debrief you. We have to, there's a lot of stuff we need to do before I'm just going to let you, you know, look at our records and go visit a seed bank.
Right. Yeah. Like one of the first questions, you're like, oh, the origin of the burn. Do you have any information about that? Like, that's classified and I have no idea who you are. So no, we have no answers for you on that. And it's like, that's
no,
fair.
Thank
that's
you. Fair. Weird fair. Person we've never seen before.
Yeah. Fair.
And that's why I like the admiral in this one, because he is a jerk because he has to be because he's an admiral.
Yeah.
But he has good reason for being a jerk, unlike many Star Trek admirals who, you know, just are jerks for no particular reason.
Right.
Because he doesn't know who these people are.
So Odette Fair, good actor. Vance, interesting character. I liked him because I think you talk about threading the needle. I think he threads it perfectly, which is he's almost like a hard to please coach or something, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, he's such a jerk, but I want him to compliment me. I want him to say something nice. I just need a little compliment and I will run through a wall to get it. And I think that's not a bad portrayal of somebody at this level where they have the weight of the galaxy on their shoulders and can't, because he's the commander in chief of Starfleet, can't be your friend. He's not there to be your buddy. And so he might even be an okay guy in person, but like, that's not his job. His job is to protect galactic civilization, essentially, and be the last bulwark of the Federation against chaos. And so he is going to be kind of a jerk and not your best friend, but he does come across as being like super competent, and he never comes across as a villain, which I think is really good. He's always like, from his perspective, he shouldn't trust them yet. But he also comes across as being like open to trusting them if they pass the tests, which it's a good line, a tough line to walk. But I think he walks it where you're like not sure about him, but also kind of want his approval.
Yes. And he's the favorite kind of, because he's not a villain, but he's my favorite kind of character in that you understand his motives and why he's doing what he's doing. But it still irks you because the characters that you know and love, you're like, no, just trust them. Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Doesn't he watch the show? Doesn't he know that they're good?
But that's, what's wrong with you?
I agree. I love that kind of antagonist who is not bad, but does not have the information yet and needs to do their job. And in the end, that's what this whole episode is Discovery saying, let us prove to you that we are valuable and that we are truly from the Federation. And this is, I think, something that was baked in, you know, because obviously the producers of the show now inherited this whole premise from like two sets of producers ago. So they have cleverly constructed a situation where the Spore Drive, which was this very weird, like, how does it fit in continuity kind of thing, has now become this brilliant kind of moment where they land in the future and yet have an advantage over the people who are 900 years in the future, because nobody else still has the Spore Drive. And I find that fascinating too. Plus you could argue, and I know in the After Trek with, or Ready Room, I guess it is now, that with Will Wheaton, they talked about this a little bit. I watched some of that today. The other part of it is that maybe Discovery is inspirational to these people who are like in this diminished Federation, because they are from the high, maybe not the height, but like high points of the Federation. They are like the real deal Starfleet. And as much as it's scary, like all this future technology and stuff that Discovery knows nothing about, you could argue that in addition to the Spore Drive, the Discovery crew like gets what it means to be in the Federation better than anybody in the Federation does. And so like they have, in both of those levels, they have stuff the Federation could use. They could use some inspiration, and they could use some Spore Drive technology. And I like how the writers have structured that so that it's not that there's a balance of power there a little bit, where like the Federation isn't just like, oh, good, another ship that isn't broken, but is also like, oh, wait a second, you guys are really valuable. Like we you get the sense a little bit maybe from Vance in this episode, like, he can't believe his luck. That these people may be a little annoying, but this may be like the best thing that has happened to him, to have these people fall in his lap. And that's, I think that that is a, some very clever writing to use Discovery's premise to make it make sense in this setting.
And I think that two examples from the show that really support that is when he says, Vance says to them, you know, we don't do 5-year missions anymore. Which I thought was a great line. And the whole, so they send them off eventually, like Michael Burnham kind of pesters him until he's like, oh, fine, go find the seed ship. It's, you know, it makes sense. But I still don't trust you. So take my, my liaison with you.
Right.
And, she'll go with you and make sure that, you know, you're doing
That's
things.
Willa, okay. Willa, the security chief. Yes.
Yes. And she, and there's a great scene where they, Stamets, and Tilly and Tignataro's character.
Yeah, Reno, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Are figuring out this radiation thing that doesn't really matter, but it's fun because they're doing a whole bunch of technobabble. And Willa is just kind of looking at them like, well, A, she says you have a very unprofessional relationship, which is true. But she's also kind of looking at them like they are completely foreign to her. Like, this isn't what the Federation, and this isn't what Starfleet does anymore. So she doesn't really get, like, you know, they're throwing out things and saying, oh, look, it was a, you know, whatever, a coronal mass ejection event and all this stuff.
But they're successful, and you get to that moment, which is one of my favorite, like, tropes in fiction, which is the, well, your ideas are unorthodox, but you get results.
You get results.
And it allows for that funny joke moment, which is like, where Stamets is trying to explain it all, like you're trying to suck up to the teacher, and he's like, "Yeah, yeah, well, you know, I know it seems bad, but it's actually fine." And Tignataro's like, "Nope, it's not.
No, it's bad.
It's actually bad. It's fine." Like, I don't know the actual dialogue, but it's that's the what comes across there is that they still they can't even agree on how disagreeable,
like,
they are.
The dysfunction is the teamwork, and then he says, "But we got used to it." And she's like, "No, we haven't.
Nope." But they do impress, and that's it goes a long way, that scene, to showing that the future Federation people are like, yeah, these people are not like us, but they also are like us, and actually we could learn some things from them because they're like really good at their jobs. Which is, I'm not sure I've ever seen in a Star Trek episode before, the moment where like a crew is like, man, we got to really impress these guys or they're not going to let us keep the ship, right? Like,
we need to figure this out or else goodbye.
Yeah, so they are trying to really impress Lieutenant Willa throughout this episode on their little mission. It's like, look at how awesome we are. Keep
we
us together.
It.
Yeah, and they do.
Yeah, because the Admiral has said, you know, I'm going to basically take your ship, disperse your crew to where they can be used because we need people, and figure out another crew to take over your ship because the technology is super sweet. Spore drive, everything else is out of date.
That's the most kind of villainy thing that Vance does. It's like, well, I'm just going to break you up and we're going to take your ship apart for parts and all that. And they're like, but we're a whole trained Starfleet crew and we know our ship, so you should just use us.
Which makes sense.
I think this may come back because I think there's an argument, like the first thing the Federation should do is take Stamets and the Spore Drive and like say we need to
make more of these.
We need to make more of these and have more pilots, and this solves our whole problem. And if you perish on a mission, we lose it. And this is like,
you can't go anywhere.
You are our salvation. So I think there will be some push and pull there, which could be actually interesting, but they do make the case, like, we're a crew. We understand our systems. We're happy to work with you. You are Starfleet and we're a Starfleet ship, but we are a team and we want to work, you know, within your organization, but as our team. So that'll be an interesting kind of dynamic that I'm looking forward to seeing, because they are, because ultimately I believe that this is what the show is going to be, right? Like, it's not like Discovery is going to drop out of Starfleet and wander the galaxy, right? Like, I feel like what we're getting to is a point where Discovery is influencing the modern Starfleet and vice versa, and they form a new kind of thing. And there's, you know, the implication here is that they're going to get some tech upgrades to be a more modern ship, but they're also going to share their spore tech. And like, I think that's going to be a fun thing to watch, but there definitely is an argument that the Admiral is right in saying, like, no. I need your spore tech, and your ship is a piece of garbage.
That's right. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And so I guess we could talk about kind of the stuff that happens in Starfleet / Federation headquarters, though apparently they're in the same place, but they're not the same thing.
Right.
And which they mention in passing, but don't, I'm imagining we'll get more information about what that means. Then we can talk about the
yeah, I assume it's like we built, basically we retreated to a space station that is it's like the head of Federation government for the 30 odd planets that are still in the Federation and Starfleet Command, but they basically got booted off of Earth, so they ended up going to this space station, and this is where they work now. But most of the stuff that's here is, I mean, there's a lot of really good special effects, I would say, where you've got like multiple level things where it's very clearly like set extensions and adding, you know, shooting it and then adding overlays of like holograms and things to make it look super futury and cool, which they did a good job at.
Floors appearing as you're walking on them because of smart matter.
Yeah, whatever, programmable matter or whatever. Lots of great interviews, because this is one of the things I was waiting for, is like the debriefing, which really should go both ways, because all the people on Discovery be like, so what happened?
What?
Like, in the last 900 years, are there like new planets, new technology? Can you tell us? But their first step is, you know, you get that scene where Tilly is like, it's essentially people saying, like, so this happened in season one, and this happened in season two.
All the ridiculous things that have happened to us, tell them to our holograms. And I did like a nice touch. Somebody in the incomparable member Slack, I would complain is a strong word, but said, well, how come their holograms have weird voices? Don't you think in the future they could fix that? And I actually like that, because I feel like they put that in there so you know when you're talking to a hologram.
Yeah, I think that's it. They got so good that it's like we have an electric car, and when it's going under 30 miles an hour, it has to make a noise, like a weird noise. And the reason is, otherwise you wouldn't hear it, and it would run you over.
Kill you, yes.
So they make it make a noise. And I thought that this actually makes sense, that the AIs at this point have all been tagged basically as AIs, so that you know that they're AI holograms and not real people. Unless they are real people, but they're not like flesh and blood people. We'll deal with that later. Like, is the doctor from Voyager around somewhere? Who knows? I don't know. Is he on the Voyager, Jay? Maybe.
He might be. He's not going to die, right? So
But the amazing... So those are fun scenes, but we have to talk about Giorgio, who gets seems to have gotten a story arc for the first time in a while. Because she blinks to turn off her holograms, but off in the corner is a mysterious man with a Starfleet badge and glasses who's watching her and seems to know lots about her and knows about the Terran. Another thing in this episode that I really like is they can't hide anything from them. So like their ship is taken over and they know about everybody, and they beam people right off the ship, and they know that Detmer's having PTSD problems. And in this scene, the mysterious man, who is played by David Cronenberg, because getting Werner Herzog in The Mandalorian was not enough. Now Star Trek Discovery has great director David Cronenberg playing a mysterious man with glasses. But he knows all about the Terran Empire and seems to be like one-upping Giorgio, because he's like, you think you're a player, but I know everything, every move you're going to make. And she gets a little more disturbed. It's great, because Giorgio is always sort of put out there as being one step ahead of all these yo-yos. Exactly. And unflappable. Then David Cronenberg appears and he's like, I got your number. And then on top of that, he says something that I think it could be a misdirect, but I don't think it is, where he's like, oh yeah, Terran Empire, it fell, and we don't even see it anymore. Like, it's been 500 years since there was even a crossover anymore, because the two universes diverge so much that we can't even attach to them anymore. And that could be a fake out, but I don't think it is. I think the point of it is to say, you're alone, to Giorgio, to like put her, like the only person that you thought you were cool because you're not from here. And so you're like, what do you care about anybody? But you are just as alone as the rest of the crew. You're just as cut off. You can't go home. It's gone for you too. And the only person you care about, who is Burnham, obviously, unless it's Linus, I guess, but it's Burnham. It is all that you've got. And like, who's this guy, and what's his motivation, and why is he talking to Giorgio, and lots of theories, no real data about it, but I love those scenes, because I love her having like a counterpart who has the upper hand on her, because it's so rare that you see that with anything other than Michael's emotional upper hand on Giorgio.
And he comes at it with a completely different energy than Giorgio has, right? He is not, they're not fighting each other, no. you know, or verbally sparring. He's no. just kind of, you know, I know who you are. I know how to deal with you. I will ask you questions and you will just lie to me. So I'm not going to bother doing that. And in fact, I'm going to find out more about you when the questions you ask me. So go ahead and ask me anything.
Yeah, so good.
You want my comm badge? Okay, here you go.
Yeah, she breaks it apart. She's looking at it. Yeah, it's such a good scene. I love David Cronenberg in that. Like, it's so great. It's like
he's
so
like
random.
My new favorite character on Discovery.
Honestly, you get a lot of these old directors to be in shows because Werner Herzog was really great in The Mandalorian mm-hmm. too. But he's got that kind of presence and you're like, who is this guy? What does he know? Why is he here? Why not just the AIs? And like. And what's fun about this episode is that's one of those threads that's just like not addressed. And then Burnham runs into her on the ship and she's like lost in a trance almost. And it's a really interesting moment of like, what's going on with Giorgio in a way? Like, she's always been like, what's her plan? What's her plot? She's always 10 steps ahead of us. We got to roll our eyes and like, oh, what's Giorgio up to? And now it's like she's shaken. That's really interesting. And that's just, yes. I'm way more interested in that than I am in the mysterious case of the viral lullaby.
they're working on a vaccine for the viral lullaby.
Oh, the other thing that doesn't get addressed at all is Adira gets taken away. Because it's like Adira Tall and there's Admiral Tall and they want to know about it. And this episode is like, not going to talk about that. Like, it's not.
Not
that's going on
the
over
point
here.
Of this episode, maybe
not
next
what,
episode.
Yeah, not what we're doing here. Well, I assume next episode is going to be "Welcome to the Team" kind of thing, and there's a clip in the Ready Room episode to that effect, which is it very much is "Welcome to the Team." What's our mission and all of that? And I think we'll get back to Adira and knowing what's going on with the knowledge of Admiral Tall and all of that. But I actually kind of appreciated that they want to talk to her, and they take her. And they're like, we're going to take you over here. And then she's gone because it's not what this episode's about.
That's right. And Admiral Vance had a relationship with Tall, but not with this person. So
right.
Don't try to get too close.
And she's got to deal with what Discovery has to deal with, right? Which is you are us, but you're not us. And we're not sure who you are. And we got to figure that part out. And I think that's fun. I think that's really good. This was Scott. This was not like the last episode or the episode before that. And yet this, I feel like Discovery is just really on a really good run here where they've done these five episodes. Very they've good. All felt different, but they all feel like super Star Trek-y. And I think continues on a level above the first two seasons.
I think you are absolutely right. And I think that part of the reason is that they keep hitting the themes over and over again. They have powerful themes. They're not kind of losing the plot. And you know, the first season, difficult to start any new show. And with all the trouble that they had in the first season, amazing that it is as good as it is. Right. Then the second season is kind of like, well, the first season really left us a lot of stuff we need to deal with. And now I feel like they're finally free to think about, well, what can this show be and what matters to these characters? And now we've got them out of the trouble of the spore drive and canon and all of that stuff. And now we can figure out what we can do with this stuff. So I agree. It's really good. And to return to the theme of, you know, what is the theme? Homecoming, loss, all of that. And that's what the Star Trek episode at the center of the Star Trek episode is about. I don't think we need to talk about the whole thing, but the non is an important part of it.
Right. Right. That we get to see Non, who is this character who was originally introduced as coming from the Enterprise, and then they sort of let her stick around. And then what they've said is that, you know, when Arium, our robot lady from last season and for the first two seasons, sacrificed herself and saved Non, that Non felt like an obligation to kind of honor her. But here we get this interesting twist, which is, I would say, a very Star Trek kind of thing, where the people... She's excited to find out that her people have joined the Federation because she was kind of an outcast for leaving home and joining Starfleet. And this is her people are in charge of the ship on a rotating basis with all the planets, which is kind of a fun, weird bureaucratic quirk, but I kind of love it. And since they all died except for the sad dad who has got to be healed on the Discovery, she's like, I'm going to take over the watch and I'm going to stay here, which is I mean, behind the scenes, it's probably like they had Nan come with them, but they didn't really know how to use her. And so right. they wanted to find a way to write her out. But at the same time, by bringing her with them and having her make this sacrifice, it's a pretty good character development. And, you know, and they can always go back to find her again. But it's so she's coming home to a place she doesn't know, but it is sort of fulfilling her destiny to kind of return to where she started. And it all fits in with the themes of the season, because this is all about, like, last episode was about mourning the loss, and this episode is about finding your new place. And I think they've done a really good job with that too, with the big themes of this season.
I agree. Although my quibble with her staying on the seed ship is that the sad dad also stays on the seed ship for some
reason.
Well, okay, he's just going to die, right?
So what's the point? No, so they don't. So what happens here? I think they may have actually even cut a scene, but there's a couple of things. This came up in the Incomparable member Slack too. If you're not a member of the Incomparable, there's a great Slack where we talk about Star Trek all the time.
we just argue about it.
Just become a member and you get access to it. But I said in the thread about this episode, I think what we're missing here is, first off, Nan stays because she's going to let the guy get taken off to be healed so he doesn't die. We don't see that, but I assume that happens. I assume, but otherwise she doesn't, like, they're not going to let him die, but he won't go because he's got his duty. Like, so we just don't see that. I also assume, and this is the thing that came up in the Slack, is I assume that they scan the seeds and then they put the seeds back. Because, like, it's a seed bank. You can't just take the seeds. We need the seeds. So presumably that there's a bunch of stuff that happens in there that this episode is just like, look, we're not going to show you that part. But suffice it to say that it was fine. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay that they didn't fill in all those blanks. But I'm going to assume that the sad dad was healed and taken back to Starfleet headquarters and that the seeds were returned to the seed bank.
I read it as the sad dad is just going to die on the ship and then she's going to watch him die, which I thought was very strange. But
yeah, well, their ways are different than ours, apparently.
Well, that's the thing. Exactly. Like, death has a different meaning for us. Well, listen, lady, those people are dead. He's not going to heal them.
Yeah. No, I read it the other way, which is that they did get him off, but we never saw that. We just never saw that part.
And my other tiny, tiny quibble with the seed ship is the process to get the seeds seems overly complicated, but it looks cool.
Well, if Starfleet and the Federation send you on a mission to the Federation seed bank and they don't give you the password.
Jason. Information security has not gotten any better in Starfleet 1,000 years from now, because
the password is the name of my two children.
No, that should never be your password.
Yeah, no, the password is give me the seeds now. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I've got a criticism that's separate from the seed ship, but that I want to throw in here, which is, and is this a criticism or is this just a dumb thing Star Trek does that I love because Star Trek does it all the time? How is it that alien Saru is somehow an expert on art history, Earth art history, specifically Giotto di Bodone, influential painter of the proto-Renaissance? Like, on one level, it is amazing, like Captain Kirk being like, I'm sure you're all aware of the works of Plato, Socrates, and Cremus of Rigel 7, right? Like, one of those moments. But, like, I'm sitting there thinking, at Starfleet Academy, did Saru just super get into his art history class? Was that his major? Because this is really specific Earth history. I mean, I kind of wanted him to be like, we had a dark age on our planet and we had a very influential artist, but it's like, no, it's all about Earth. Okay.
It's Earth. Earth. Yeah. I did think that was interesting and surprising, but just, you know, Starfleet is a humanist organization.
Yeah.
So, you know, they indoctrinate the,
I just have to assume
the academy.
That when Saru went to Starfleet Academy, that he just loved his art history class and,
he got totally into Renaissance painters.
And there's a better analogy in Kelpian history. But nobody's going to get it, so he's going to use the Italian painter instead.
That's right. But nobody, it's kind of like one of those things that, like, well, surely you're a human, so you've heard of this artist. And the admiral's like, I don't know.
I have no idea what that is. That did, was he alive the same time as Picasso? They're like, no, that's not even the same. Never mind.
Just
they don't teach art history at Starfleet Academy anymore. And they're like, we barely even have an academy. So that's sorry, no.
No, we don't. I guess I'll look it up in the computers later.
Yeah.
But thanks a lot, Saru.
Anyway, that was a moment that I thought, should I roll my eyes here? And I was like, no, oh, I kind of love that it's this dumb. And Saru has detailed knowledge of Italian painters from the proto-Renaissance. Yeah, sure.
And I get why, as a writer's choice, it makes sense for the daughters to be his password, because it's very, he's a sad dad, and it makes
he
sense.
He is a sad dad.
It does. But Marisa, as I was watching it, I turned to her and said, that's an awful password.
Yeah.
And then she rolled her eyes at me. And then she said, well, but his voice print too. They need his voice. So it's like a two-factor authentication. And I thought, all right, well then it's not as bad as it could be.
Point to Marisa there.
There you go. Exactly. She, she nitpicked my nitpick, and I liked it.
Yeah.
So Jason, I think that we've spent over 40 minutes singing the praises of this episode. So I feel like it is safe to say that this is another strong Discovery episode.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I don't feel that they're all samey, which is kind of nice, and it shows you they've managed to find a really nice way to walk the line between episodes that feel like episodes, like this is the one where this happens, and yet also further their story. The challenge now that they've found like their first objective in this storyline, which is find the Federation, is how do they shift gears to what is coming next, which apparently is going to be like going on missions for the Federation while trying to find their place and also figure out maybe what happened with the burn. And that song. What's the deal with the song?
What's the deal with the song? Mm. And I hope that, and I think this is not, I will be very disappointed if we find out that for some reason the Federation or Starfleet or something has been corrupted and they caused the burn.
Oh God.
And it's all bad. And they're like, oh, please, I don't need that. Just make it, you know, that the Federation and Starfleet are kind of in this crisis moment and kind of inward looking and for good reason, and Discovery is giving them hope and will, you know, turn the tide and everybody will be happy and the burn happened because of whatever. But
you know, they're maybe even long gone or they've got bad motives, but it's outside the Federation or somebody who wanted to leave the Federation. And that Discovery teaches, I think what we're all hoping is that the storyline ultimately is that Discovery provides hope and perhaps answers that allow the Federation to rebuild
to flourish.
Itself. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's clearly what they're telegraphing here. So hopefully that is what we will go. But I will be disappointed if it is the opposite of, you know, everything's awful and so is this. Because we need, you know, Jason, we need a little hope in the real world. I don't know how you're feeling about events of the last, 400 years of 2020, but...
I'd like a little. I think that would be good. Let's hope that Star. I feel like Discovery has always been ultimately optimistic. They've taken the show to some dark places, but in some ways, it's the most idealistic of all Star Trek shows. Which is, I know, weird, and it got a lot of criticism. You're not real Star Trek. But it really is. And this season puts a real dot on it of saying, you know, we're about what the Federation stands for and what it means and. What it means to be a member of Starfleet. So I hope they keep it up, because that's the fun and inspirational stuff that I think we need right now.
Yes. And I think it's fair to say that the two main characters are Michael Burnham and Saru, and they both have an interesting and complicated relationship with Starfleet, but they share the commonality of respecting the ideals that Starfleet stand for. They may come at them in different ways and try to solve problems within those boundaries, and perhaps, you know, the new Michael Burnham a little bit outside those boundaries. But they both are dedicated to the same thing. And I think that's where we find a lot of the hope in this show, right? Those two characters.
Yep. Fantastic.
So, and that's, you know, I wear glasses because they make me look smart.
Sure. Why not? I mean, listen to David Cronenberg. He directed The Fly.
I had no idea it was David Cronenberg, but I was delighted by it.
Who's next? Steven Spielberg? Is he going to show up?